It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. This portion of the show brought to you by Oreck. The Oreck Home Center is all locally owned and operated across the St. Louis area. Great places to get vacuum cleaners like the Magnesium RS or any of the other vacuum cleaners in their line, but much more than vacuum cleaners, all sorts of home cleaning supplies as well from ORECK, which spells Oreck. I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss, Ian Geis here with me, and now Colin Jeffrey has stepped out of his main role as our news director and switched into the clothing of his alter ego, Showbiz Boy, who does not have a cape.
Those are weird tights, though.
He does have an email address, though, right?
Yeah, showbizboy550@gmail.com.
Hi, Colin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you, Paul?
Good. Nice to see you. Last week you were on the road in Philadelphia with the family. Had a good trip?
Yeah, he was.
Yes.
Good.
Running up the steps. Standing in my footprints.
What happened to your voice?
I don't know.
What was that?
I don't know. And so we have a couple of things to get to here and a bunch of showbiz stories. The big movie opening up today is Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation. Now, before you get to the review, I just want to say I was invited to go to the screening of this earlier this week, and I opted not to because I mentioned earlier this year, back in February or March, HBO aired a documentary about Scientology called Going Clear, made by a great documentarian named Alex Gibney. And it was really a devastating takedown of the Church of Scientology, for which I'm sure their legal people are still going after him and everybody involved, including some of the people who were in the Church of Scientology and left it and told some of the stories, the horror stories of being in there. And, of course, the two biggest celebrities associated with Scientology are John Travolta and Tom Cruise. And John Travolta is mentioned a little bit in the documentary, but there's a large section in there, particularly towards the end, about Tom Cruise and his relationship with David Miscavige, who is the president or director or whatever his title is now.
Grand Poobah.
Yeah, Grand Scientologist, whatever his name is. Clearest guy in the world. Whatever.
Most audited.
Yeah. And it just creeped me out. I mean, I was totally creeped out by Tom Cruise's story in that movie. Now, I already knew that Tom Cruise could be a creepy guy, you know, the jumping on the couch thing with Oprah, and he's always laughing hysterically at every appearance he does on any TV show. Everything is so, so funny to Tom Cruise.
Oh, that, what was it, like a 7 or 10 minute video that he did for the Scientology group? Remember that video that got out where it was him sitting on a chair talking to the... it was...
Very, very creepy. If you haven't seen that, is that available anywhere now, Going Clear?
Still on HBO, but you can go to HBO Now, which is their new standalone streaming service, and it's normally $14.99 a month.
Yep.
You mentioned that you heard... No, they're just giving 30 days away for free. You can do a free 30-day trial there. And HBO Now.
And then you can watch this documentary, which is on there. And everything else, I guess, that HBO offers.
Everything HBO's ever done.
And also, if you're already an HBO subscriber at home and you haven't seen it, it's probably available on demand through your cable or satellite system. And also, if you have the app, HBO Go, you can watch it on your tablet or laptop or whatever. I recommend it because, although I do give you the caveat, there are parts of this documentary that will make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. You're just going to be creeped out by a lot of what you see in there.
Yeah.
So because of all that, after seeing that movie, I decided I can't go to another Tom Cruise movie. And I'm just, every time I see him, I'm just going to be totally creeped out, which, of course, meant it was impossible to watch late-night TV this week because he was on all the shows. He was on Fallon. And
lip-syncing, I think.
Yeah.
I saw him being interviewed, and I was weirded out, and I haven't seen the documentary yet. I'm just weirded out about his involvement in the Scientology.
Yeah, which has been going on for a very, very long time. Yeah. But I wonder if there's going to be backlash against this movie because of that, Colin. What do you think?
No. Maybe domestically, but this is the first. That's not just in my ear, is it?
No.
No,
that because I went to see it last night, and I'm like, uh-oh.
What's in your ear? What are you talking about?
No. Yes, so...
You don't think the Scientology thing will work against him in the movie?
We'll see. We can get really into this, because I actually prepared for this.
Wow.
The thought that you might look at this. When we look back, since Tom Cruise really burst onto the scene, and we're going to go to Risky Business.
Yeah.
So 1983. Since then, he has not made a certifiable flop ever. He's made movies that were on the border, and the closest you can get to that are actually fairly recent. It's Rock of Ages that actually barely beat its budget worldwide, but that's an ensemble. He had a supporting role, so I'm not going to hang that around his neck.
Okay.
And the other one is Lions for Lambs, which was a just about 2-hour lecture from Robert Redford. I actually like the movie, but it's essentially an anti-war lecture, and that's the only reason. I mean, that exceeded its budget, but it didn't double.
But again, it's not a Tom Cruise starring vehicle.
Yeah, it is. He's the main character in that with Meryl Streep. He's the senator who's leading you through half of the story.
I did see that.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, you're right.
It's about the two
young
college graduates. Robert Redford directed it and was in it. So you look back over this guy's history, and I'm going to give you a few of the movies here. He did Risky Business, All the Right Moves, Legend, that was rough. That was an early one that was not particularly good. Top Gun, Color of Money, Cocktail, Rain Man, 4th of July, Days of Thunder. And now we get into Tom Cruise being the biggest movie star on the face of the earth. We see during this time A Few Good Men, The Firm, Mission Impossible, Jerry Maguire, Eyes Wide Shut, Magnolia, Vanilla Sky, Mission Impossible 2.
See, now I'm surprised that Vanilla Sky doesn't qualify as a flop. That was a terrible movie.
It earned 2.5. I'm talking about box office money. Yeah. It earned more than 2.5 times its budget. And when you get to about that twice its budget, that's when you start about making money.
Okay.
Then we get to The Last Samurai. Horrible movie. One of the largest grossing R-rated movies of all time.
Wow.
Yes. Mm. Then we go to War of the Worlds. It was supposed to kill his career. It made $591 million worldwide.
Oh, man.
Mission Impossible is the... This is the Tom Cruise sort of will go and clear hurt him. It's 2006. It's couch jumping. Mission Impossible 3, great reviews. Turns out not to be... It sort of didn't have legs here. Still made $300 million globally.
Wow.
Then we get to Lions for Lambs, like I said, but then we look at Valkyrie, Night and Day, Ghost Protocol, Rock of Ages, Jack Reacher, Oblivion, that was awful.
Oh, wait a second. Night and Day with Cameron Diaz and Valkyrie, and what was the one after Ghost Protocol that you mentioned?
Jack Reacher.
Yeah, that was a flop, wasn't it?
Domestically, but you're forgetting this is Tom Cruise. He gets about 60 to 70% of his box office sometimes from overseas.
Wow.
This guy is unbelievable. Edge of Tomorrow, even it was way too expensive, it still made money. He in essentially what amounts to 30 years full-time making movies has one flop to his name. He's the most bankable movie star in the world. Wow. There's no one even close to that record.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. And so we see that after 2006, Ghost Protocol made $690 million worldwide. Mm-hmm. It's the highest grossing Tom Cruise movie ever.
Now, I will say I like that. That was a pretty good one. They kind of said, okay, we got to get this series going again. And they did with that. And if that had not done as well as it did, we wouldn't be seeing Rogue Nation this weekend.
We'd have seen it. It still made money. Like, that's what we're forgetting is these movies, just these Mission Impossible movies since two, really, have just been huge successes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a bit of a step. But... So we can talk about Rogue Nation. We can start off with that. I saw this on IMAX. I'm going to tell you that if you want to be immersed in a movie, go see it in IMAX. Otherwise, you're probably just fine seeing it in the regular format and saving $7 a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
So probably just, it's not 3D, it's just IMAX and laser-guided sound,
okay,
which I don't buy into.
What does that even mean?
I have no clue.
Well, let's ask our technical director, Ian Geist. What does that mean, laser-guided sound?
Well, you see, the sound is transmitted by laser beams.
Oh, that explains it. Thank you. Thank you very much. I don't understand all the technical mumbo-jumbo we threw in there.
They say that as if we're supposed
to bring your laser goggles, because you don't want that sound.
But it does burn your ear hairs out.
Yes.
Well, not
so
necessarily
that's
a bad thing. Yeah.
But Rogue Nation...
I'm not sure that the demographic that would go see this is of the ear hair generation.
I know.
Sorry.
I know.
You never know.
That's a nice piece of technology to have. Do they upsell you for that?
That's a $7. Right?
No, but you know what?
$7.
$7, yeah. you get the IMAX and the ear hair burn.
You know what? They're younger. They won't have the ear hair when they get older. It'll take it a completely...
Oh, that's good.
Preventative.
Yes.
Personally, I'd rather have the popcorn refill, but it's nice that that's offered.
Yes. So the biggest stunt everyone's talking about in this movie is a plane. You've seen it if you've seen a preview.
Mm-hmm.
It's Tom Cruise.
Every commercial shows it.
Every commercial shows it. I'm going to tell you two things about that, and if you haven't heard him, you don't know this. That's real. That's a practical effect. They strapped him to the side of a plane. He told the pilot who was going to be flying this, hey, we need to make certain that my legs are, you know, flat against this. Are we going to be going fast? And the pilot just looks at him and says, yeah, you're going to be glued to the side of this plane, essentially. No parachute is my understanding of what he wore, but he's strapped in. And they run a plane down a runway and fly up to 5,000 feet with Tom Cruise strapped to the side of it.
What in the world?
Yes.
That is insane.
That phrase right there, that four-word phrase, what in the world? That's what the insurance guy in charge of the movie said. All right, let's go through the script here. Tom, this will, be, of course, be a stuntman or special effect. No, Tom's actually going to do that? What in the world?
Yep. Not the most dangerous stunt he does in this movie.
Not
the most dangerous stunt
he does.
Well,
I remember
in the
last one, he was on the top of the tallest building in
Dubai. Or, yeah.
Yeah.
Does he do all of his stunts?
He does. This is the other thing about
Paul
Tom
Blart?
Yes. Kevin James can't even ride a Segway. Are you kidding me?
He has help on some of them, he'll say. The rock climbing scene from Mission Impossible 2, he actually did it and he tore up his shoulder, but he had someone else who was going in some scenes, but he does a lot of his own stunts, not all of them. That's the other half of this. Tom Cruise is an unbelievable dynamo to be, oh gosh, is he 56, 52 now?
He is, I think he is like 55, 56, something
yeah.
like that.
And when you see what he's doing, he's 53 now. And when you see what he's doing in this, it's going to boggle the mind. He's probably the hardest working actor because of the shape he keeps himself in. So so that it begins actually with this airplane stunt.
Wait, okay, so let me back up here. Why is he hanging on to the outside of an airplane?
Because he works for the IMF, the Impossible Mission Force, and
yes.
they have to get some bad weapons off of a plane, and they were supposed to be able to hijack the plane electronically, but it does not work out, and so he has to run onto
happens.
The plane. Yes.
He's hanging onto the plane, and then you hear this on the door.
somebody open the door.
By the way, right there, do that again.
Yeah.
Laser-guided laser. Audio, ladies and gentlemen. Beautiful.
Thank you.
That's secret.
And my ears are clear.
But that stunt.
Going clear.
My ears are going clear. Thank you. Thank you for the correction.
Full circle.
That is the opening scene. And so it sets a pretty high bar. The premise of the story continues that the IMF is disbanded when Alec Baldwin, as the head of the CIA, says these guys are cowboys and they're being reckless. Ha ha, isn't that funny? I will tell you, Alec Baldwin is horribly miscast in this role.
Oh, yeah?
Everyone else I really like, Alec Baldwin does not work as kind of a government official who's supposed to be in charge of things.
It's interesting because about the same time that Tom Cruise was coming out with Risky Business in 83, that'd be about the same time that Alec Baldwin was first playing CIA guy Jack Ryan. And so now after all these years, he's now the head of the CIA?
Yes, that's. I think there's all sorts of... The Mission Impossible movies walk that line between parody and serious action movie, like at razor's edge.
Okay.
So the IMF is disbanded, but they discover that there's this international crime organization known as the Syndicate that is essentially made up of agents from all of the government intelligence agencies around the world who've been presumed dead or disavowed. And they've put together this group that is causing things to happen that are starting wars and famines.
Mm-hmm.
And Ethan Hunt, Tom Cruise, says, I'm going to stop this. That's what this movie is about, him chasing down the Syndicate.
So the rogue nation is the Syndicate.
Yeah, and they actually say that in there, a little cheesy. It's an actual rogue nation.
Okay.
But, you know, you kind of go with it because it's a Mission Impossible movie.
Is Ving Rhames in there with him again?
He is. Ving Rhames, Tom Cruise, only two characters in all of the Mission Impossible movies.
I like them together.
I really like them. They add Simon Pegg for the last, I guess it's the last two now.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Ghost Protocol. And Simon Pegg is in some early movies I really like. Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, more recently World's End.
He's been in the Star Trek movies, right?
He's been in the Star Trek movies as Scotty. I'm going to say this with all love I have for Simon Pegg. He's a sellout at this point. He lends an air of credulity to these movies which I'm fine with.
Yeah, but nobody's,
I like him
nobody's going to see this because Simon Pegg is in it.
No, but it adds to it because he's the legitimately funny one.
All right.
We need to talk about some people behind the scenes with this. Christopher McQuarrie directs this. You might not recognize that name. He wrote Edge of Tomorrow. He also wrote The Usual Suspects.
Mm.
And that describes this movie really well. This is a thriller with action movie elements. This is the most tightly written Mission Impossible I can remember. Hmm. This is even more of a thriller than the first Mission Impossible that had John Voight and all the you know, crazy double crosses and everything.
Yeah.
This movie moves along. It has great set pieces in it that are a lot of fun to watch. It has a female lead, sort of, that I really like. Rebecca Ferguson, you're questioning her motives. Where is she? There's one scene in here that they should have taken out, and it seems the obligatory scene. Her clothes are wet, and she has to change. She's just wearing her underwear and takes her shirt off, and you see her from the back.
I hate when that happens.
Oh, man.
But it just destroys it. You're building this strong female lead, and there's no purpose for the scene other than to look at a woman's back and backside and underwear.
I don't see a problem with that. What's wrong with you?
It just sort of it tears down what they're trying to build, this strong female lead.
I don't think so.
Okay.
You're crazy.
That being said, the dangerous stunt, I'm not going to spoil anything about it other than Tom Cruise had to learn to hold his breath for 6 minutes to perform this stunt.
Okay, no, he didn't.
And he really did that?
No, he didn't.
The reason he had to learn how to do it wasn't for a single shot, is because they had to get the cameras. They released sort of some footage of this, and he... After a guy strapped himself onto the side of a plane, I'm willing to believe
that I don't believe that he held his breath for 6 minutes. Who is he, Chris Angel?
He practiced. He's Tom Cruise. That's who he is. He's Tom Cruise.
He's level 31, whatever.
That's right.
Whatchamacallit.
He's the clearest of the clear.
That's why he can do it.
He's no David Blaine.
So,
by the way, whatever happened to that guy?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think he's back to doing magic. He did that ABC special a couple years ago where he went into celebrities' houses.
He went into celebrities'
houses and did tricks.
And did close-up magic for them, which was at least better than the stupid stunts. I'm standing on a pole for a month. All right, good. Good for you.
Frozen in a block of ice for a week.
Yeah.
So this is a tightly written movie. It has great sort of set pieces, action. I really liked it. Mad Max Fury Road was probably my favorite action movie in quite some time. This is a close second to that.
Wow.
I really enjoyed it quite a bit. I gave it an 8.5 out of 10.
Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation, 8.5.
It's 2 hours and 10 minutes. I'm telling you, there's one scene that should be cut, and I already told you what it was. Other than that, you need pretty much everything else.
Wow.
And the villain is a creepy, creepy villain.
Well, all of these things need a good villain. You can have great stunts and a great lead, but you need a great villain. This one has it.
Weird voice, but he's creepy. So, yes. So, go see it.
Dan is sitting right here. I can hear you talking about him.
Yeah.
That's the voice he comes out with. He's got a creepy voice.
Yeah.
It hurts.
All the voices he can do.
I'll tell you this. You know what you need when you have a creepy voice? Laser-guided audio.
That's right.
So people can hear all of it.
Here's my laser-guided audio.
Okay.
Yes.
Pew, pew, pew.
That was fantastic. All right. I have a movie to review for you today. I told you a while ago, about 2 weeks ago, I went to a screening of a movie. And because we're embargoed from talking about these movies until the day that they open, I tweeted, I have just seen the movie that will be number 2 on my worst of 2015 list.
Yes.
Behind Hot Tub Time Machine 2. And the name of the movie is Irrational Man. It's the new one written and directed by Woody Allen.
Oh.
Now, Woody Allen has had some good movies in the last few years. In 2011, he had Midnight in Paris with Owen Wilson. That was a very, very good, very funny movie. Then he came back the next year with a horrible movie with Alec Baldwin called To Rome with Love.
Mm-hmm.
Then he bounced back from that with Blue Jasmine, which was really good and won Cate Blanchett the Academy Award because she was so good in that movie. And then last year he had Magic in the Moonlight, which I reviewed as one of the worst movies of last year. And now he's not bouncing back to the good. He's bounced further into the bad.
Oh, no.
With Irrational Man.
Is this about an old man trying to sleep with a younger woman?
Well, it depends how old you think Joaquin Phoenix is.
No, I'm just saying that.
Because Joaquin Phoenix is what, in his 40s or something like that, early 40s? And the young ingenue is Emma Stone playing a college student. She's a college student, and Joaquin Phoenix is a college philosophy professor. I will say, he's more believable as a college philosophy professor than Mark Wahlberg was as a college English literature professor in The Gambler, which will also be on my list of the worst movies of the year.
Isn't there another gambling movie coming out this year?
Yes, there is, starting in September. I think September 25th is the release date of Mississippi Grind.
I wonder who's in that.
Some radio guy. Huh. Can't talk about it. Embargo, you understand.
Oh, yeah.
So this movie, Irrational Man, is boring. It is badly plotted. Without getting too deep into how all of these things come together, Joaquin Phoenix's character is at lunch one day with Emma Stone's character, and they overhear a woman at a table nearby complaining about a custody battle that she's having and the problem she's having with the judge, who is apparently not being fair to her in that custody battle, and her life is being torn apart. And as they leave, Joaquin Phoenix and Emma Stone start talking about, wouldn't it be better for that woman if that judge weren't around? And so Joaquin Phoenix's character takes it upon himself to kill the judge by poisoning him with orange juice in the park. Yes, I said poisoning him with orange juice in the park.
So got a vitamin C.
So they don't know if that woman at all.
Correct.
They just overhear her.
Correct. And so they don't know the judge.
And they take it upon themselves.
He takes it upon himself. They just had a conversation about it, and he takes it upon himself. And then after the judge dies, there's no evidence directly linking him, but Emma Stone is suspicious because they've been talking about it. And Parker Posey is also in this movie as another professor at the campus who has fallen for the Joaquin Phoenix professor character. And she suspects that he's involved in this as well. And so now he's trying to make it into a suspenseful thing of, will he get away with this murder? Will he be caught with the murder? What clues will there be that will take him there? Mm-hmm. This is the kind of movie that is, I mentioned a few weeks ago how there have been too many movies in which somebody commits a crime, a murder, a bank robbery, something else, and they go to their getaway place, usually a cabin in the woods, and there's a TV there, and they turn the TV on, and at the moment they turn the TV on, there's a TV news report about the crime that they committed and how police are looking for them. Always happens. Well, in Woody Allen's world, there's no TV. TV doesn't exist, and there's no such thing as the internet. They have to go to the newsstand to get a newspaper the next day, and they're leaving through it, and Emma Stone happens to see, oh, that judge we were talking about is dead, and he looks over at, oh, my goodness, and they're reading it in the newspaper. It is, you know, there's no such thing as a smartphone. Nobody has a cell phone in this movie. Nobody has a computer. Nobody has an iPad. It's just, Woody Allen is just disconnected from the rest of our reality in that way, and so are his characters. Here's another way they're disconnected. At a certain point in this movie, Parker Posey's character and another character who's a professor at this same college, they are kind of fed up with what they're doing, and they say, you know what I think I'm going to do? I think I'm just going to leave here and I'm going to go to Europe. I'm going to go to Europe and I'll get a job teaching there. Because in Woody Allen's world, that's an easy thing to do. Just pick up, leave your life, go to Europe, and just walk into any school. Hi, I'd like to be a professor here. All right, come right in. You can teach philosophy. You can teach English literature, whatever it is. That's how things are in Woody Allen land. Now, I will tell you, he has made a good murder mystery movie before. It was called Manhattan Murder Mystery about 20 years ago. He also made one that Martin Landau, I think, won an Academy Award for called Crimes and Misdemeanors, which has Alan Alda and Jerry Orbach and a bunch of other talented people in. Those are good Woody Allen murder mystery movies. This one, Irrational Man, is terrible. And yes, it is, again, the older man, younger woman thing. And as much as I like Emma Stone, she gives a terrible performance in this, just like she did last year in Magic in the Moonlight. And you blame the director for that, Woody Allen, because she's good in everything else. Go look at her in, what was the Michael Keaton movie from last year, Birdman?
Yeah.
She was fantastic in that. How can that same actress be so bad in this? You've got to blame the script writer, Woody Allen, and the director, Woody Allen. Joaquin Phoenix, usually reliable, not good. Parker Posey, usually reliable, not good. To get those three to give bad performances in the same movie is quite an accomplishment. I'm giving this movie 1.5 out of 10.
That ties my low for the year. Oh, no, I guess I gave some.
My low for the year was Hot Tub Time Machine 2, which got a 0. This one's just slightly better than that. But it is really, really bad and one of the worst of 2015. Do not go see Irrational Man from Woody Allen.
I don't think Soon Yi taught him how to use a smartphone yet. That's why they're not in there.
You know, in a recent interview, you know, he made a deal with Netflix in which he's going to do a six-part TV series for them. Although he says now, I wish I hadn't made that deal. I don't even know what Netflix is. How is that possible, A, that you made the deal with a company and you don't even know what it is, and B, you have a wife and children, a wife who's 30 years younger than you, and kids who are 70 years younger than you. How do you not know what Netflix is? Don't they have computer? I know you are a Luddite, Woody, but people in your home are using the internet.
Mm-hmm.
How do you not know about that?
I've never liked him.
I've liked a lot of his stuff, especially the early stuff. Annie Hall, Manhattan, Take the Money and Run, Sleeper, all of that early stuff. And he's made some good ones along the way, like the ones that I mentioned here.
Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex.
That was a good one, too.
Was my favorite.
Yeah. But,
that's it.
But in recent years, he's been hit or miss, and he went hit, miss, hit, miss, miss. This one is a big miss, one of the worst movies of the year, Irrational Man.
Do you want me to get to my other movie here?
We got to take a break and get to Tim here. I just realized we actually have a choice between two creepy guys at the movie theater this weekend, Tom Cruise and Woody Allen. There are our reviews, but we've got more coming up after we go to the roads.
Meet me.
And we're going to go airborne because Tim is looking down on the roads and filling you in on where the problems are, Tim.
It's kind of an interesting lead-in because I caught the part, we've got a choice between two creepy guys. I thought you were going to say Tim Weiland or Colin Jeffries.
No. We never would have
we
said.
We would never call you a creepy guy when you
never,
could hear it.
Yeah, we never would have thrown Colin Jeffrey in there.
Yeah, right. With Colin and ears out. You're right.
Yeah.
All right.
By the way, this broadcast brought to you by Laser Guided Audio.
Laser Guided Audio.
Use it on your ear hair today. Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris, Ian Geist, Dan Strauss, and showbiz boy Colin Jeffrey. We've just given reviews of Rogue Nation, the new Mission Impossible movie, which Colin gave an 8.5. And I gave Woody Allen's Irrational Man a 1.5. So we've got a 10 for you today. Two movies that add up to a 10 out of 20. They're both opening at the theaters around town. And also Vacation opened this week. Mm-hmm. Did you see that?
No.
This is the sequel.
Heard bad things.
Have you?
Have you?
I've heard good things
really about
vulgar,
it.
Which is so far, you know, removed from the original version. And just not it should have never been made. I mean, I'm sure we could all probably agree with that.
It's Rusty taking his family.
This is the son of Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo in the original, and they're going on a cruise, a trip across
to Wally World.
Right.
And it's basically the same type of movie.
The same path.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard it's funny. I'd like to see it. I'm going to go see it.
All right, well, then you can give us a review after you go see it. Speaking of Ed Helms, you know, he was once part of the crew of correspondents on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, which is coming to an end next week, by the way. And they announced today who the final three guests are going to be. Monday, Amy Schumer, who couldn't be hotter right now with Trainwreck, who's doing gangbusters at the box office, right? And then Tuesday, he's going to have Dennis Leary, who's got a new show on FX called Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, which is not nearly as funny as Dennis Leary thinks is. And then on Wednesday, Louis C.K. will be his final guest. That's a pretty good week. And then Thursday will be Jon Stewart's last show, and instead of a half hour, it's going to be, I think, a full hour. So you may want to make sure you set your DVR if you're a Jon Stewart fan. But I made a list of some of the people who've been correspondents on his show.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, and this is just a list of maybe a dozen or so people, there have been lots more. That show has been a springboard to a career for probably more people than any other show except for Saturday Night Live. And a lot of these people went on to better careers, and by that I mean better projects than a lot of the people from Saturday Night Live. Here we go. Stephen Carell, Stephen Colbert, John Oliver, whose show on Sunday nights on HBO is brilliant. Larry Wilmore, who now follows Jon Stewart. Ed Helms, who I mentioned. Mo Rocca, who's on CBS Sunday Morning. And my wife likes a show of his on the Food Network called My Grandmother's Ravioli. Samantha Bee and Jason Jones, who each are going to have their own shows on TBS this fall. Louis Black, of course, kickstarted his stand-up career mm-hmm. big time. Asif Manvi, who's in a whole bunch of movies. Kristen Schaal, who's in Last Man on Earth mm-hmm. on Fox.
And an animated show as well.
That's right. Rob Corddry, who's been in a bunch of movies, including my worst movie of the year, Hot Tub Time Machine 2. And Olivia Munn, yes. who went on to The Newsroom mm. and a bunch of other things. And every time I say it, Ian makes that sound.
Yes.
mm. So, I mean, that's just some of the people who've been on there in the years that Jon Stewart's been doing that show. And, of course, let's not forget the man who preceded him in that chair, the whatever happened to Craig Kilborn.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, talk rough. About dropping off the face of the...
Well, he had a CBS show after Letterman. For
yeah,
a while.
It was
the Late Late Show with Craig Kilborn. He did that for like 2 years and then decided, I don't want to do this anymore. And everybody else in showbiz said, okay, we forgot you already.
yep.
That was it. So so that Jon Stewart's Daily Show comes to an end next week.
Thursday.
I only mention it because of the Ed Helms connection there.
Yep.
What else do you have for us?
Got a quick review of a documentary coming out this week called A Lego Brickumentary Beyond the Brick. This is directed by a man named Daniel Jung. His last film was a short documentary in 2012 called Saving Face. It won the Academy Award. It was about women who've had acid thrown on their face in Pakistan.
Mm.
So this is decidedly lighter than that. It sometimes comes across as an ad for the Lego company. That being said, it manages to keep the charm of the Lego movie. You've got a talking Lego figurine who leads you through it. It's interesting to see the path of the company and how they almost had to declare bankruptcy. If you want to know more about Legos, you can find that. It's a Lego Brickumentary.
Okay.
We've got another story about Amy Pascal. We've all forgotten about her.
Who is she?
She is the ousted executive of Sony Entertainment, the one Sony movies. She got fired after the hack.
And the interview.
Yes. Well, it turns out she may not have gotten fired because of the hack as much. It turns out she may have gotten fired because Sony is in really dire straits. This year, they are the sixth highest grossing film distribution house.
Mm-hmm.
Behind everyone, including Lionsgate.
Sixth out of six.
Sixth out of six that you're worried about, yes.
Okay.
And their highest grossing film this year is... Paul Blart, Mall Cop 2.
really?
Wow.
Some of their other movies that she was responsible for in just the last about year and a half include Pixels, Man in Black 3 that cost way too much money, $225 million, Will Smith's After Earth, White House Down, Elysium. She had Annie last year that was supposed to be their big hit.
Wow.
Made $134 million worldwide. And The Interview. So she may have been ousted because...
she wasn't good at her job.
She greenlit some really bad movies.
Yeah. Wow.
And then you wanted me to look up some Netflix numbers.
Yeah, because I saw a story this week that Netflix still has a lot of its subscriber base, not on the streaming side, but on the DVD side. And I will tell you, I am one of these people. I actually have three Netflix DVDs sitting on top of my TV right now that have been there for about 2 months, which is why I'm glad we have Netflix and we're not back in the old Blockbuster days or I'd owe a mortgage
mm-hmm.
because I hadn't returned those things yet. I can't even remember what they are. Obviously, they weren't urgent watches for me, but there are a lot of us who still get the DVD side. And do you have any idea what percentage it is?
Well, I've got the numbers for how many people, and it's not that there are as many subscribers, it's that it's much, much more profitable. Their streaming side is only going to just about break even this year because of all the new content they're making.
Okay.
There are 5.3 million DVD subscribers in the U.S.
Out of a total of?
There are an additional, and this is as of the beginning of 2014, 49 million
almost streaming. 50 million, which is probably up to 60 million by this year.
Streaming subscribers. That may be worldwide,
so,
but either
so
way.
So 10 times as many people are on the streaming side than are on the DVD delivery side.
But their profits come from the DVD. It's apparently responsible for a couple $100 million a year in revenue.
Wow. You know why I keep the DVDs? Because the streaming side doesn't have as big a selection.
It doesn't of the movies.
Particularly if you want to go back into catalog stuff from years and years ago. You can't get that stuff streaming in many cases because they haven't paid for the streaming rights. See, the people at Netflix have to pay the movie companies an extra fee for the right to stream that to your TV or your computer. But with this old stuff, they buy the DVDs, then they can just rent it out, you know, send it out over and over and over again. Doesn't cost them anything. There's no extra overhead for that.
And they can check in 3,400 movies an hour in one of their machines.
Yeah.
So they... They have it down to a science.
Yes, they do. And last thing I want to mention is Ryan Seacrest had a show on Fox for the last couple of weeks called Knock Knock Live. I didn't see it, but both Ian and Colin just buried their heads when they heard me mention it.
And Frank
I heard about it. Yes.
Frank saw it. Frank said it's horrible.
I heard him talking about it, that it was absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
Canceled.
Thank goodness.
Really?
Canceled after two episodes.
Wah, wah.
Now, here's the interesting thing. What about the people who were in the parts that were recorded? Because part of it was live and part of it was recorded. And some of those people got prizes or money. They get to keep that, don't they?
I guess so.
I would assume that they do.
You don't on the Wheel of Fortune because they record more episodes than they use. You only get the prizes if yours airs.
Really?
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Well, maybe that's the case.
Now, here's the interesting thing. We may be seeing the end of Ryan Seacrest's career because he's had other shows on Million Second Quiz. That got pulled off.
That was so bad.
That got pulled off the air after two or three episodes.
After 900,000 seconds.
Something like that. He had a show called American Juniors, which was a junior version of American Idol. That didn't go more than one season. He had a show called On Air a few years ago. I can't even remember what that was about. Did not last a season. And American Idol is about to air its final season.
Now, is that all these shows, besides take American Idol out of it, but all these other shows are his idea, correct?
Not his idea, it's certainly his production company.
His production company and everything. And American Idol was not.
No.
And that's how he got his fame and fortune
that's
and
exactly
everything.
That's exactly right. Although, let's also keep in mind that he's the one responsible for the Kardashians.
Yes.
His production company does Keeping Up with the Kardashians and I Am Kate, the new Bruce Jenner, Caitlyn Jenner TV reality show and all of that. So it's not like he's hurting, and he still has a radio career, but it seems like his TV hosting career, except for Dick Clark's Rockin' New Year's Eve with Ryan Seacrest, the rest of it seems to be over.
You know who should pick up a show and call it Who's There is Brian Dinkelman.
Brian Dunkelman.
Dunkelman.
It was the other original host of...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ryan does Knock Knock, Brian does Who's There. I like it. This segment of the show is brought to you by Auric, with Auric Home Centers all throughout the St. Louis area. Great places for vacuum cleaners and other home cleaning supplies. O-R-E-C-K spells Auric.